Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests. Help you lead a more positively minded life. Rough going out there, you know? Rough going out there, especially now with job searches. Speaking to a friend of mine, Claudia Fox, who was talking about how she helps people prepare themselves for job searches. And just get this picture. Just get the idea of what it's like. Let's go back a little bit to the jungle. You're a silverback gorilla. Can you picture yourself a silverback? You're the head of your tribe. You're the alpha male. And, or the alpha female. And the one thing about you is you got hurt. You know, somehow in the last fight you had with somebody, you got hurt and you're wounded, but you can't show anybody you're wounded. So you don't want to show them you're wounded, because if you do, they're going to pounce on you. So you, what do? You make sounds. Rawr! You make loud sounds and you scare everybody and you go around scaring people because you're wounded. And because you're wounded, you want to frighten people, because if you could frighten them, then they'll stay away from you. Wounded dog, you know, growl at you. You know, you have to be careful. When animals are wounded, they are very dangerous because they'll strike at you. But worse than that, they'll make loud sounds. Now, wounded animals, and many of us are wounded, and many of us get wounded day to day, tend to be the loudest, most aggressive people. If you walk down the street and you see somebody who's just barking and screaming at everybody, wounded animal. If you were to look at all the aggressive people in the world, you would say to yourself, wounded animal. Wounded. Now let's move this for a moment. Because the perception is that if you are a wounded person, or a person who's been hurt, or a person who feels vulnerable or wounded, you're going to act in an aggressive way. So aggression very often signifies, you know, vulnerability. Now let's look at a job. You're going for a job and you want to go to work. You've been fired, cut off, let go. And you're going to go to apply for a job where, in order to apply for the job, you have to be picked among many other people. People have to look at you and they have to think, oh, you're very special. So the one thing you can't do is show the vulnerability that you feel. Because if you feel scared, if you feel hurt, you would walk in there and what would you really say if you were being real? Oh, please hire me. I need a job so badly. I feel like crying. I stayed home all day yesterday. I was looking. Everybody turned me down. Please hire me. You won't get hired. But if you look a little out of reach, if you look like somebody who the employer might think, well, here's a person of strength and power, I'm going to hire them because they're going to grow my business. So like the alpha silverback, you have to hide your vulnerability. You have to go to that job employment. You have to go to that job and you have to say, I am strong. I am mighty. Hire me. Well, how many times in life do you have to be that way? Let's say you're going over to your mother's house for dinner during the holidays, but you just broke up with your boyfriend and you feel terrible inside, but you don't want to let your mother know because you're afraid that if you tell her, she's going to say, I told you he was no good for you. I told you he just wanted one thing, and you just don't want to deal with her because she'd chew you up and eat you up and spit you out. So you want to kind of keep it covered. So what do? You go there, like the silverback or like the job applicant, and you make believe you're strong. That's the topic for our program today, making believe. The masks you wear when you're wounded. How do you do it? You know how much energy it takes to hold your head up? When you're a kid, when you're a baby, you know, when you're a baby, one of the first muscles that develop are your neck muscles. You got to get that head off the ground. Holding your head up is such a tough thing. That's why hitting that pillow feels so good. You know, you lay down and you know, oh, I don't have to hold my head up anymore. holding your head up, keeping yourself erect, making people believe that you're okay. Now, how much of your life do you think you spend making believe that you're okay? There are a lot of people I know who literally are so used to making believe they're okay that they are okay. They go numb. They become like, they're on automatic, like a robot. And the only time they don't feel okay is when they're with somebody they love. Now, that's a very strange thing. Let's say you're in love with somebody or you love somebody, and all the time you're not with them, you feel good because you're numb. Because you're dead, because you're a robot, because you go through life and you do all your functioning and you can't feel a thing. Then you get together with this person and suddenly your heart melts. Suddenly your defenses melt and suddenly you feel all the pain that you're really carrying around. Well, isn't that terrible? I mean, when you get together with somebody you love, you should feel good, not bad. But sometimes it's that very person that invites you to become real. Well, why do we talk about this today? I talk about it for a couple of reasons, because I wonder, is there any way of us reducing the amount of stress that we cause ourselves by having to be artificial, by having to be fake all the time? And I was listening to a song from my childhood. Now, here's a song I'm going to play for you, but even though you might find it kitschy at first, it is one of the most important poems I ever heard as a child. I remember listening, and I couldn't believe I was listening to these words. Everybody else was singing it because it was a doo-wop song, and nobody was paying attention to the words. But I, child of 10, 12, was paying attention to these words because as I heard the most succinct poetry about my reality as a child. So I'm going to play it for you. And when you hear it, the first thing you're going to say is, oh, yeah, 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 how cute it is. But listen up closely. Listen to the words. Identify with the very words themselves and see how they fit for you. It's from an old song by the Platters. Listen to this now, friends. I could stop there for a minute. Would you believe something as profound as an insightful as this in the 50s? My need is so much. You know, I pretend because I'm lonely and I don't want anyone to be able to tell that I am.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Too real is this feeling of make-believe.
Believe, too real when I feel what my heart can't conceal.
Too real when I feel what my heart can't conceal. Whoa! What is that? What is that? Well, what about you, my friends? What about what you conceal? Do you think you're concealing it, or do you think you got it well covered up, as many people do? Hey, big smile, come in. You know what happens to me, unfortunately, is people come to see me for a one-time meeting, and they meet me, and they are so used to wearing this mask that the minute they come in my office, I mean, it takes maybe 5 seconds. I don't say a thing. They sit in the chair opposite me, and boom, they melt into a real self, usually in the form of tears. Nothing I do. But you know I'm inviting you to be real. You know that's my invitation. You know you found a place where it's safe to be real. So most of life, it is not safe, because like any wounded animal, you'd get eaten up if you were seen by your peers as vulnerable. They'd say, oh, good, gobble, 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 we'll just your food for us. You know, when you think about it, there's very little that you could survive. So the question is, when can you and do you dare reach in for that realness? So I would like to ask you about this today. I would like you to ask you about the burden that it cost you to carry yourself around, you know, carry around this artificial face, this fakeness. Now, a lot of people, you know, keep a positive approach, which is really a fabulous thing. But if it is running against you all the time, if it's so hard to keep your head up, it's tough. One more thing, since I'm going to be dragging you through the mud a little bit today as we get into this, I'm going to pull up my old friend Roscoe from WBAI, as many of you know Roscoe. Many years ago in 1966, Roscoe read a poem on the air. And he read a poem by a man named, what was that man's name? Charles Finn. And when he did this, of course, it was kind of a remarkable response he got. And so I'm going to invite you men and you women to step into this. Now, this is all so far. We're talking about men's identity and men's need to hide themselves, because it's such a male thing, you know, to look strong, you know, suck it up, be strong, don't cry. It's such a male thing to be that way. But what happens when you're a man and you see somebody and you want them to know who you are and you'd like them not to be fooled by you? So for that, I'm going to play something I haven't played in a while for you, and then we're going to be getting your responses to it. But here's something potent. Now, let's see. I know. So we're going to be bringing you that in just a minute. Where did he go? This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. What does it carry for you? I'll get that. I'll come back to that in a minute. What does it mean for you? What does it mean to you to carry this weight all the time, the weight of being fake and artificial and having to keep your head up? You know, what does it mean to you? Does it mean that you could just get by? Does it mean that there's nobody who knows you? There's a show we did yesterday on significant, and we were talking about being significant, and we were saying, you know, part about being significant is about being seen, being appreciated. Is it that being appreciated is so important that you can't afford to be real? Well, here's what I think, my friends. I think if you get down the pike at the end, when you get to the end of your days, you're like, you know, Zorba the Greek. You say, I am who I am, no matter who I am, and that's what I am. And if I am this, please, I'm going to at least live this honest life. And that I'm proud of. Here's the piece by Roscoe I'd like you to hear.
But don't be fooled by me. Don't be fooled by the face I wear. For I wear 1,000 masks. Masks that I'm afraid to take off. And none of them are me. Pretending is an art that's second nature with me, but don't be fooled. For God's sake, don't be fooled. give the impression that I am secure, that all is sunny and unruffled with me, within as well as without. That confidence is my name and coolness my game. That the water is calm and I'm in command. And that I need no one. But don't believe me. For God's sake, don't believe me. My surface may seem smooth, but my surface is my mask. Beneath this lies no complacence. Beneath dwells the real me in confusion, in fear, and aloneness. But I hide this. I don't want anyone to know it. I panic at the thought of my weakness and fear of being exposed. And that's why I frantically create a mask to hide behind. A nonchalant, sophisticated facade to help me pretend, to shield me from the glance that knows. But such a glance is precisely my salvation, my only salvation, and I know it. That is, if it's followed by acceptance, if it's followed by love. It is the only thing that will assure me of what I can't assure myself, that I am worth something. But I don't tell you this. I don't dare. I'm afraid to. I'm afraid your glance will not be followed by acceptance and love. I'm afraid that you'll think less of me. That you'll laugh at me, and your laugh will kill me. I'm afraid that deep down I'm nothing, that I'm no good, and that you'll see this and reject me. So, I play my game, my desperate game, with a facade of assurance without, and a trembling child within. And so begins the parade of masks, and my life becomes a front. I idly chatter to you in the suave tones of surface talk. I tell you everything that is really nothing, and nothing of what's really everything, of what's crying within me. So when I'm going through my routine, don't be fooled by what I'm saying. What I'd like to be able to say, what for survival I need to say, but what I cannot say. I dislike hiding honestly. I dislike the superficial game I'm playing, the phony game. I'd like to be spontaneous and genuine and me. But you've got to help me. You've got to hold out your hand even when that's the last thing I seem to want. You can call me into aliveness. Each time you're kind and gentle and encouraging. Each time you try to understand because you really care. My heart begins to grow wings. Very small wings. Very feeble wings. But wings. With your sensitivity and sympathy and your power of understanding, you can breathe life into me. I want you to know that. I want you to know how important you are to me. Don't pass me by. Please don't pass me by. It will not be easy for you. A long conviction of worthlessness builds strong walls. The nearer you approach me, the blinder I strike back. night the very thing I cry out for. But I am told that love is stronger than walls, and in this lies my hope. Please try to beat down those walls with firm hands, but with gentle hands, for a child is very sensitive.
Well, that's the Roscoe poem, my friend. It must have touched you on many levels. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I mean, yeah, how we pick up your spirit a little bit? Should we just kind of...
Big girls don't cry. Big girls don't cry.
Is that the better way?
Big girls.
Yeah, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. There's a couple of traps in that poem. One of the traps is this one about codependence that we see. Very often, when you have somebody who is down in the dumps like that, he very often will turn to another person and say, you can save me. You can save me, but you have to be sensitive with me. And that, of course, is part of the trap as well. But part of the significance about what Roscoe is reading here in this poem is about how the mask is there, that the mask is present and we live these masks. What about you, my friend? Have you spent your life, do you spend most of your life hiding behind a mask? Now, what may the mask be? One of the masks, I think, is the mask of significance. Yesterday we talked about significance, and tomorrow I'm going to bring in even more information about significance. But the mask of significance is the belief that we have to prove that we are important. I have to validate myself. I have to get you to believe that I am important. I have to make myself important. How do I make myself important? I may make myself important by the clothing I wear, by the car that I drive, by the way that I spend money, by the way that I speak, by the way that I look at you. I may make myself important by being dependable, by being somebody who you could count on. I may make myself important by spending money on you. I know somebody who always gives $10 tips. Everywhere she goes, she gives a $10 tip to somebody. It's $10, not a $1, not a $2. It's always a $10. And it's an unusual amount, but she gets a significant amount of attention for that $10 tip. People pay attention to her in a different way. She's the tipster lady, and they call her that when she's not around. Oh, there's the tipster lady. But because of that, people will go up to her and they'll say, oh, hello, is there anything I could do for you? Is there any way I could greet you? Is there any way, you know, do you need a glass of water or something? Because they're kind of going up for like if you had a puppy, and the puppy was going to get a reward from you, you know, and you had these nibbles in your pocket. It would be like that, you know, I'm coming up to you for a prize. But on her side, she feels important. Are you significant? Do you have a need to be important to somebody? And is the way that you think you should be important that you put on an artificial face? Well, everybody will say, no, I don't wear an artificial face, but you put on makeup in the morning. It's an artificial face. Men will shave in the morning. It's an artificial face. The clothing you wear, the way that you present yourself, it's all artificial face. Am I judging it? No, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm saying it's fine that you do it, but do you acknowledge that you do it? How much effort do you put into being who you're not every day? So now this becomes a very interesting question. Imagine if you had a say, if you had a way and say, how much time do I spend being who I'm not every day versus how much time do I spend being who I really am every day? So ask yourself right this minute, are you being who you really are or are you being who you're not? Like you might be at work. You might see somebody walking by. You may smile at them, but you don't really feel like smiling, but you just may smile out of courtesy. How much time do you spend being who you're not? Versus how much time do you spend being who you are? But there's a third category. How much time do you spend not being? Not being anything. Not being who you're not, not being who you are, which I think falls into the category of being who you're not. You see, once you're not being, you're just not being who you are. Now, what does being who you are mean? That means you're connected. You're connected to yourself, you're connected to your soul, you're connected to your heart, you feel real. You can feel your emotions, you're not emotionless. You're not just this logical being who's doing task after task and getting everything done. You're being real. I want to hear about this from you. We're going to be taking your calls today. 212-209-2900. We're not going to take them right away, but you can queue up because, after our short break, we're going to take a short break, and then I'll play you some a little more lively music, I think. And then when we come back, we'll take your calls. And here's what the question is. Do you tire of it? How are you with your family? How are you with your children? I mean, children don't want to hear their parents' grief. Do parents bring their grief to their children? What do? Do you tell your child how you're really feeling? You say, mommy's not feeling very good. Or do you just make believe you're okay? You're supposed to be strong for your children. Is that the rule? Is that the rule that we have as parents? Does being a parent mean automatically being a phony to your child? Or are you real with your children? And what if you're depressed? Now, if you're constantly depressed, are you real with your children? Do your children carry the burden of your depression? It's a very confusing thing. Well, I'm here to help you sort it out today, and that's what we're going to kind of look at today. I'd like to talk to you about it. As I said, our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. When we come back from our break, I want to, by the way, those of you who are going to ask about it, the poem is by Charles C. Finn, F-I-N-N. You could find it on the internet. If you just look under that name, Charles Finn. And we're going to be talking to you about how much time you spend just making believe that you're okay. And maybe there's an alternative to it. I'm not sure. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little music, and then we'll be taking your calls. I think with Art Blakey from the Monin disc one, and of course the name of the song is Are You Real, which you might have recognized. since that's our subject today. 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls, talking about real existence, and talking about what it's like to carry that burden of being artificial. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Oh, my God, I'm the first one. As soon as I heard you mentioning this subject, I had to run to the phone because this is the story of my life.
What's your name?
Pamela.
Hello, Pamela.
Hi. My whole life has been that question. You know, and then I heard Roscoe doing his poem, and I was a Roscoe listener. I'm old.
Oh, you remember Roscoe.
Oh, for God's sake, I'm an old lady now. I'm old, I think.
But it must have touched your heart to hear Roscoe, huh?
Yeah, and then I'm wondering, like, you know, I don't per se remember that poem, but I remember Roscoe and listening to Roscoe back in the day. And did Roscoe bring these thoughts to the forefront for me? And then did I become what Roscoe was suggesting? Or, well, I guess that was my question about myself anyway.
Yeah, so you think that yourself, that you are now, may have come from some source outside of yourself.
Well,
you think you might have been programmed in some way.
Perhaps. But aren't we all?
Well, sure. I mean, in many ways. But that's not what the issue is. The issue is you're talking about yourself.
Okay.
Are you saying that you suspect that there's a part of you that's not real based on something that was done to you from the outside, maybe even from a radio program?
Yeah, I think I'm a very, like, let's say I was influenced a whole lot as I was younger and growing up. And
so you're that kind of an empath who might have received signals from outside sources that might have influenced you in such a way that you abandoned your real self in place of some other self.
Yeah, true.
Wow. Okay, so let me ask you something. What about your parents? Did they have an influence on you, too?
Well, yeah. I mean, my whole agenda, and it's always been forever, was like the words to a Dori Previn song, "I'm always loving someone more than he loves me." You know, I don't know if you know that song, but it alludes in there to, like, I dance to please my father.
Yeah, so in effect, what you're saying is the following. As a kid, you were really sensitive to whether you were loved or not. And you had to pay attention to the unspoken signals of your parents, especially your father, to find out whether you were loved or not loved and whether you felt safe.
Yep.
And in doing so, you validated this belief in these signals, these unconscious, unspoken signals. And you have to live your life trying to interpret what's real and what's not real.
Exactly.
Because you didn't have the kind of family that really helped you determine that.
No, I started to realize, like, my feelings were never validated, you know.
Yeah.
They were always like, oh, you're so dramatic, and oh, this, and oh, that. And, you know, it was like, no.
I'm sorry, Pamela. I understand how difficult that would have been for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the truth is, when you're somebody like you, when you're somebody who is invalidated, you tend to become very dramatic with your feelings because you want people to listen. So you've got two things going on. They're accusing you of being dramatic, and you are dramatic.
True.
But it doesn't make you wrong.
I was. I still probably am.
Well, I'm glad you've got along this long, Pamela. I tell you, I'm glad you're one of our old listeners. I'm glad you've listened to Roscoe, and I'm glad you're with us in the positive mind.
I won't leave Roscoe. Armand, the station has taught me who I am and helped me define me and my thoughts and beliefs, and I'll never leave this station.
Well, thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Armand. Bye
sure.
for now.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. So if you could have learned from Pamela just then, you could see how a child's mind starts to take on this belief system of who am I being defined by the outside. That happens especially when your insides are not validated as a child. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Hi, this is Diane in Union.
Hello, Diane in Union.
I'm so glad I got through today. I have a number of thoughts that I need to kind of mishmash together, if I may. A couple of days ago on the broadcast, you had a woman named Jacqueline who, she was trying to help somebody, and I identified with a lot of what she said, not with the kind of strident, urgent way that she said it, but I've tried to be helpful to people, and I never looked at it as a way of controlling. I always thought I was just trying to be helpful. And right now, I've realized over the past few years that I tend to have relationships with people who need this sort of help, and they always seem to have these masks on. And when I love somebody, I tell them that I care about them, and they don't have to be ashamed of these things, and I try to be accepting. But at some point, I end up feeling like what you talked about earlier, which was you have to protect yourself from getting hurt by the actions of these people, and you feel like you have to frighten them into being scared to hurt you.
Yeah, so let's take this back a moment, Diane. Yesterday, I also said yesterday on air that we search for validation and we search for some kind of way of being with people. And we search it through two ways. One is through love and the other is through connection. What you do is you search for connection. You find people who are wounded puppies. You find wounded citizens and you get in there and you help them out. You nurse them. You take care of them. But part of what you get, and this way you feel connected, which is a wonderful thing that you like. But part of what you're also doing, Diane, is you're playing safe. By finding the people who are wounded, who you tend to, eventually the same scenario is always going to happen. They're always going to unfold in a way that feels harmful to you because they're never going to be able to give back what you need. So I think I need you to stop being a nurse for a while, you know? And become a nurse to yourself.
I think
it's time to, instead of just taking care of all these wounded people when you see them, because I know you. You walk in a room, if you see a need, you're going to go fill it. And I would like to have somebody filling your need instead, or at least you filling your need.
I find that I'm not sure. I don't recognize this apparatus at work. I try to find people who are self-sufficient and that I admire, and in the end, they reveal themselves to not be together and have. If I could get specific for a moment, I have trying to come out of a relationship with a man who it turns out has like a secret life. And even though I told him I would try to accept it, he still even lies about it to me. And I get angry.
I'm
trying to remove myself.
But Diane, let's think about this seriously. You must be, you know, I think you should work for the CIA. I think you should work for the good CIA. If Obama has a CIA, which he must, you should work for them because you have such a sensitive nose that you could smell out somebody who's going to wind up doing this, even if they don't appear like that.
Even if I don't mean to.
Even if you don't mean to. It's an unconscious mechanism. It's terrific.
How do I make it more conscious so I don't get myself in this situation? And how do I protect myself without being cruel or unkind?
Yeah, I understand.
I don't know how to do that.
Well, it's not really protect yourself. The whole choice is, I think the choice is that which touches your heart is going to be somebody who has got a secret and a need. And what you have to do is you have to not trust the heart anymore. You got to trust your mind a little more. Why don't you connect with people intellectually first? and see if you're not taking care of them. Don't pick up the tab. Don't make them dinner. Don't buy them food. Don't take care of anyone. And see who's there who might take care of you, who might, you know, in some way reach out their hand to you, as opposed to you're taking care of them. And just go on a diet of not taking care of anybody.
I've been trying. It's very difficult to resist.
But you've been doing well, haven't you?
I'm doing what well?
I mean, you're getting better at it, aren't you?
I don't think I am. I know that there are times when I'm in need, and I identify so much with the times when no one will help me, and
sure.
I can't bear to inflict that kind of heartache on someone.
Well, you don't inflict it on them.
If I hold back help when I can.
No, you don't. You just hold back your help. You watch what happens. You'll start taking care of yourself.
Okay. I'm coming to see you, Armand.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to it, Diane.
I contributed to the station. And
well, that's great.
I haven't come in yet because I wanted to get a handle on things before I came in and get the most use out of it.
Okay. Well, you send me an email in advance. And tell me what you want, and we'll have that in there when we come in. I'll finally meet you. How nice.
Armand, you're helping so many people, and I hope to be one of them.
Diane, I hope I can help you. I sure I will. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for calling.
Thanks.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this Armand?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for your program and for the subject today. It's right on target for me. Instead of a problem, I would like to tell you about a funny solution.
Sure. What's your name?
I'm Susie.
Hi, Susie.
Hi. Hello. And I have a wild, mad, passionate love affair with a sweetheart. But he has to wear his armor. And he treats me at arm's length with haughty disdain. It's so, so funny. And so I'm so used to it, and we play little games about it. But my recipe for dealing with this, we live together, and when he's dressing or coming out of the shower or something, I insist on a naked hug. I say,
really?
I want to get to you before you put your armor on. And we both acknowledge it. And it's fun.
No, a naked hug.
A naked hug. And I prescribe that for everybody.
For everybody everywhere?
Everybody everywhere.
What an image I'm having now. The subways look terrific.
You have four hugs a day to be healthy emotionally.
Well, you see, but something's happened to you. When your mate has this kind of compulsive disdain.
Right.
And he's got a compulsive negative attitude, which some people have.
From Garfield.
Sure.
He said he has assumed the persona of Garfield.
Well, no, I would I would say it goes a little differently. He hasn't assumed Garfield, but he and Garfield have an identity.
Yes, I know.
You know? But the real question becomes the following.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to live with this negative pain all the time, but
right.
He's found you in his life.
And it's fun for me.
And you don't take it seriously.
Well, I keep saying, hey, I'm a big girl. I can handle this. And besides that, he is so amorous.
Yeah, so it's a wonderful thing on many levels, as long as you can handle it. Because I think that's true of many people.
Uh-huh.
You know, I hear of people very often talking about being related to people who have chemical or hormonal problems. And there's a way, let's say it's a woman's going through menopause,
mm-hmm.
there's a man who can watch all of this go on, and he can love her through the entire process if he could gather himself to take the distance and to see, it's mm-hmm. not about me. You know, Susie, his disdain is not about you.
It's right.
It's about Garfield.
Righto. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 212. So now we got Roscoe and Garfield creating people. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. What a lovely group of people. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You're there.
Oh, yes, I'm here. Oh, my goodness. I was listening to the radio. I just shut it off.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, Armand. It's Matilda.
Hello, Matilda.
Hi.
Matilda, I was listening to your song yesterday. Matilda, do you know the song by Jacques Brel, Matilda?
Oh, which one? I thought I knew the Australian one and the Harry Belafonte one.
No, 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 no. Jacques Brel, in the original Matilda, M-A-T-H-E-L-D-A, is one of the most phenomenal songs. And on YouTube, if you listen on YouTube, you could hear him sing it in the original. It'll touch your heart amazing because it's about the Second World War, and it's about his experience in Amsterdam.
Really?
Right, enormously touching. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, that's a new one. Out of all the people, all these years, they've always quoted the other two. I've never heard of this one. Thank you.
Sure.
You were previously talking to someone who sounded exactly like myself not too long ago, and I just sat there and said, I can't believe this is where I was, and I'm not that far away right now. She was talking about always helping other people and just disappearing to herself, I think, from what she said.
Yeah.
And I was just going to stretch out a hand and say, I'm there, I was there, I'm still there, working on it. But taking care of myself, the advice you gave her about almost taking a vacation from helping others and being that person for oneself, and which is what I'm working on right now, has been a secret gift. It's not easy. It's like an addiction.
It is like an addiction, you know, because it gives you the significance that you're looking for on one level.
Exactly. It's also, I found that when I stopped, and I don't know why I'm getting choked up, when I stopped, I found that there was no one there for me.
That's right.
So I said, well, if I'm overextending myself to all these people, being such a friend, how can I learn to be that same friend to myself?
Well, that was the big secret, because you turned it towards yourself.
Yeah.
So you've been waiting for Matilda forever.
Yeah.
Well, then, since you've been waiting for Matilda, we're going to have to give you the gift today. Stay with me, Matilda.
I'm there.
Mama, you see what I see? On your knees and pray for me, Matilda. Come back to me. Charlie, don't want another beer. Tonight I'm going to drink my tears. Matilda, come back to me. Go ask the maid if she heard what I said. Tell her to change the sheets of the bed.
Now, you search that out in the original of Jacques Brel.
Oh, my God.
There she is. Matilda's Come Back to Me. And that's your theme. I mean, that's the theme that happened. Because when you were a kid, you gave up Matilda. You gave her up. She was given to everybody. Pass her around. She'll make everybody happy.
Well, it was my job. I was a human doing, not a human being.
Yeah. Nice work, Matilda. Nice work.
Oh, no, that's wonderful. And what you said also about the masks in the beginning with the pretender.
Yes.
That part was the piece that kind of pulled it together. It was a mask for myself. Didn't know. I was so busy proving that I had a right to live.
We often hide behind that function. We hide behind the function of giving to other people. We hide behind it. We become doers, you know, like you said. We become, and it masks us. It makes us kind of important. But look at you. You're such a beautiful being the way you are. I mean, who would I rather have as a friend? The Matilda who compulsively gives, or this Matilda who makes her choices? Who, if she loves me because of who I am, not out of her need to love me. What a gift you are.
Oh, thank you, Armand. And the gift that came back from, and it's happening slowly, of course, is that when I let go of having to prove, which is what I think it actually turned out to be, trying to prove that I have a right to be loved, I wound up giving myself the love that I was trying to get from others, which is probably why I was overextended so much. I had no energy left.
Yeah, I hear. Thanks for calling in, Matilda.
Thank you, Armand. Thank you.
Sure, and don't look up that Jacques Brel original YouTube,
okay.
Matilda. You're going to see a Frenchman sing. He's not actually, he's from Amsterdam, actually. But you're going to see a passion behind a voice. It's going to touch you.
It sounds like the Russian voice of a movie I saw called White Knights. It has that guttural, deep, intense feel.
You're going to get it. You've got it. You're already there.
Oh, thank you, Armand.
Sure. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi, Armand.
Hello there.
Hi. I'm glad I got through to you today.
I'm glad you did, too, because we had time for one more caller, and I'm glad it was you. What's your name?
My name is Anne.
Anne, thank you for calling. Hi there.
Hi. I hear you give such good advice every day to everybody, and I would always make an attempt to call.
And tell me what you need today. What do you need?
What do I need today? You know, I always say to people, I'm trying to find me. I'm trying to find Anne. But they would say, what do you mean you're trying to find Anne?
Sure.
She says, I don't know. It feels like a part of me is missing that I can't seem to put my finger on. Mm-hmm. And when you were talking about the mask today, I says, you know, I always pretend.
And you pretend and what? You pretend that you're okay?
Yes. I pretend that I'm okay, that everything is all right. But deep down inside me, there's this heart. And right now I'm going through something that I'm dealing with. And it's kind of painful. I try to ignore it, and then
Anne, you're sad, right?
Yes, I would say that I'm a sad person.
Not a sad person. No.
Okay.
Let's say right at the moment you're sad.
Yes.
And don't you feel that sadness right now, even as you talk to me?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. What did you lose?
What did I lose?
Yeah, first thing that comes to your mind, what did you lose?
I don't know. I always say I've lost me, you know, like
I've lost myself, huh?
Yes.
So where is she? Look for that little girl, you know, Anne. I want you to look in, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a little trip, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to close your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to go back. I want you to go back to the house where you were born. Or the house
I don't even know the house that I was born.
All right,
I was born in one country and grew up in another country with a grandparent and never had my parents around when I was growing up.
I see.
So I don't know where to imagine.
I see. So I want you to imagine your grandparents' house.
Okay.
And I want you to look for a closet. And I want you to open the closet door, and I want you to see little Anne is sitting underneath there. She's just there. She's got her knees up, you know.
Okay.
Can you see her?
I'm trying to see her, because there are no closets. Because I come from the Caribbean, there are no closets in the house.
I understand. Okay, well, wherever she is hiding in the corner, I want you to invite her up. Do you have a pillow anywhere near you?
No. Right now, would you believe I'm at work?
You're at work?
Yes, I'm sitting at the airport on the ramp, you know, so it's like...
My gosh almighty, we're making it a little difficult. Well, you give me a call back tomorrow.
Okay,
I want to work with you tomorrow. We'll see what we can do.
Okay, I would appreciate that, Armand.
Anne, you're a beautiful person. I'm glad you called in. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. At the airport, no less. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. Sorry I couldn't get to all of you. Hey, if you want to listen to today's show, you can go to WBAI.org or thepositivemind.com. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and we're going to talk more about significance.
Blue Train by John Coltrane here on WBAI. We're at 99.5 FM. We're also available online at WBAI.org. Coming up next, the monthly Laughing Nightmare, the CCCP, the Comedy Players, so stay tuned for that. Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton at 3 o'clock. 99.5 FM, WBAI, and WBAI.org on the web.
Hey there, volunteers, members, and listeners. WBAI's Spring Fun Drive will begin on May 4th and continue through May 28th. This time, we're going to do things a little differently. We're going to have volunteers. Yes, that means you, our faithful listeners. During this drive, we're asking that you register for specific shifts, which will begin in the mornings with the wake-up call from 6 to 9:15 a.m., and thereafter, three-hour shifts throughout the day. A list of all the shifts can be found at WBAI.org. To volunteer, call me, Vera, at 212-209-2826, and I'll add you to the fun drive schedule. Due to building security, please call ahead so we may enter you into the system for entry into the building. And don't forget your picture ID. That's WBAI's fun drive, May 4th through May 28th. It's your volunteer participation that makes this radio station work.